Hello and welcome to a cacophony of melancholy, Legends of Philadelphia.
Whoa.
These are your hosts, Typhoid Tony Trove and Jaundice Johnny Zeter.
Jaundice.
I said Zeter. I'm Brian Boo Man, helping. Shouldn't it be Fear Man? Come on.
Right there. No, it's the alliteration is powerful.
Oh, I guess, yeah. Helping out on engineering duties. You might be wondering, why do these guys sound undead? Well, in addition to being Philadelphia natives, Tony Trove and Johnny Zito have a spooky little t-shirt business, Jeff Bellini, that focuses on Philly culture and in-jokes. Lots of times, customers will ask us, where did they bury Ben Franklin's signed monster? Or they want to know if the city has ever been wrecked by kaiju. Oh, I hope so. Maybe one day. So we decided to start this podcast as an easy explainer for new Philadelphians and a refresher for the old heads. The city fascinates and excites us, so we're hoping to share that with you. The lantern flies, I think, are from a giant Mothra-like lantern fly. And that's why
they're
we have
the
to
babies.
Kill them, because then there'll be then there'll be a million giant ones.
This is the precursor, right? The little ones come in and they summon the big one.
Mm-hmm. And the government knows about it, but they won't tell us.
They're surveying the land. They're like the perfect location for us to take over.
So yeah. I guess all the more reason to stomp them out if you see them.
Stomp them out.
Yeah, yeah.
How many have you killed? I've killed like dozens.
I mean, I've killed a few, but they're quick.
They're faster than you think.
And I don't know. Well,
they jump.
Yeah. They don't quite fly, but they jump.
They fly away. They, like, yeah.
They mock you. I'll tell you, I feel like they fly into me very often.
Like, I was just going to say that. I feel like they fly right in my face. Keep your mouth closed.
Keep your mouth. And you're always making loud exclamations, so this must be very difficult for you.
Is it? And I'll tell you what.
And another thing.
Booby, go ahead. I have things to say. I have opinions for this whole crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Be on the lookout for horrific lantern flies. I guess keeping the Halloween theme going, this week we're going to be talking about Philadelphia horror hosts. A horror host is a person who acts as the host or presenter of a program where horror films and low-budget B-movies are shown on television or the internet. Usually, the host assumes a horror-themed persona, often a campy or humorous one. The horror host has had a long and storied history in radio, comic books, and local television. So today, we want to shed some light on Philadelphia's campy creatures of the night.
Ooh, I feel like every city has one, or many.
Many cities, yeah.
Many
yeah.
cities have many horror hosts.
Bear, Delaware, they have their own.
Bear, Delaware. We were talking about Vampirella a couple weeks ago, and it's funny that it could be a live-action person or it could be like a character in a comic book that's hosting haunted tales, you know?
Yeah, yeah, like the Crypt Keeper. Yeah.
It's such a staple that, like, it's even in comic books, this, like, trope.
I think a lot of times, because, like, a lot of horror things are short stories, and horror can exist in a short story. It's part of the genre, you know? Someone might read a short horror story as opposed to a regular story, right?
I mean, it's anthology-based, because so many people have to die across the course of a horror movie or a horror story. So you might as well, you know where this is headed. You might as well get it over with and get to the next one.
Wait, like Edgar Allan Poe, here's a spooky poem. You know, here's a spooky poem? All right. Give it to me. Like, there's just like.
Aren't these things supposed to be pretty? Aren't they supposed to be nice?
It's like, there's not many other genres that, you know, people will consume the short versions of them or the, something alternative, you know?
Yeah, it's good for an anthology because, like I said, people die. You don't want to get attached to anybody because they're probably going
to
die.
Sorry, Lenore.
Do you guys have any experience growing up watching horror hosts or things like this on television?
I remember Saturday Night Dead as a kid.
We're going to talk about that later. What do you remember about it?
That it was the local version of this, that they made local jokes. I don't know. I always say growing up, it was hard to know when something was a local broadcast or a national broadcast or a worldwide broadcast. I thought Captain Noah was a worldwide television show as like a little kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then like, you know, the Stella Maninger from Manayunk, you knew that was a local one. You know, that was, they're not broadcasting that in L.A. or
she's making a lot of local references in the name alone.
Yes. And yes, exactly. Hey, we get it, right?
How about it, Bierman? Do you have any childhood recollection of horror hosts?
No, but I knew like Zachary and like who's the other one? Goalie? What's his goal? Something Goalie or something? I don't know. That's not a local one. That's like a national one. But
even like Elvira or
yeah, and like Elvira and like that kind of stuff. But my brother texted me about Dr. Shock. Somebody else wrote in. Also, I'll pull up his name, but they...
it's a lot of Dr. Shock fans. Wrote in.
Yeah, a lot of Dr. Yeah. Shock fans out there.
And I didn't know what that was till you made a joke about it a couple weeks ago. You know.
I guess my experience with horror hosts is mostly... I mean, like most things I learned about through Scooby-Doo, Elvira was on an episode, and I was like, what is this lady? And what, you know, and asked about my parents, asked my dad, like...
Elvira was on Scooby-Doo?
Yeah, I'm 99% sure it was Scooby-Doo that I saw her on. And I remember asking my parents, like, who is this lady? What? And my dad was like, it's a horror host. And, like, I didn't know what that was. And then I kind of put it together with Tales from the Crypt were on TV, were on HBO at the time. And it was like, or maybe it was Showtime.
You know, there used to be a lot of...
stayed up late.
Yeah, there used to be, like, TV had a lot of hosts for shows years ago. Like, even, like, all these, they would, like local hosts would host, like, a cartoon. And, like here's a cartoon, kids. And, like, I don't, even, like, Krusty or whatever. Like, they were... kind of like guiding you through this. That was kind of like a formula on television for a long time.
Yeah, even Rod Sterling hosts the, you know, the Twilight
right,
Zone or whatever.
Right,
Here's a bunch of horror stories about science fiction-y things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so it was like kind of something I learned about on the national level. It wasn't until I was more like in college and like really exploring one of our passions, which is local broadcast history, that I learned about these other figures that we're going to discuss today.
Johnny is the name of the guy who wrote us, so thank you. He mentioned Stella from Manayunk and Dr. Shock in his email. Yeah, I never heard of either one of these, but I watched some clips from each, so to familiarize myself.
Doing some research.
Mm-hmm. For once.
So in 1957, Universal Pictures leased a package of classic horror films and forgotten B-movies to television stations across the country. To promote the package, stations hired actors and sometimes newscasters and weathermen to play MCs in the guise of mad scientists, vampires, and ghouls. So this was this goes back to content creation. They had some cheap pre-1948 horror movies, and they were like, these are corny, how do we sell them? And so the first... horror host was Vampyra out of L.A., and she dressed like Morticia Adams from the New Yorker cartoons, and she spoke like Snow White's Evil Queen. Meanwhile, on the East Coast, we had Zachary, the host of WCAU's Shock Theater, Zachary, a.k.a. Roland, and the Cool Ghoul, also known as the Cool Ghoul. He looked like a cadaverous undertaker and punctuated his cultured musings with a deep, rolling laugh. So this one's like this is going way back to the beginning.
I like how there's like always like the voices that are like the yeah, this is what Frankenstein probably sounds like. Or this is what this is a witch voice.
Yeah, like Zachary's voice is like it's what you do, it's a scary voice that you do. And I don't know if he
no.
Yeah. Yeah, you can hear it without even if I was like, "Oh yeah, and he does a scary voice." You know exactly what it sounds like. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even say words.
I was listening to the Monster Mash last night, and I was thinking about how that's always the Frankenstein voice.
Yeah. It works, though. It works every time.
Something about it.
What's the Frankenberry? That's what he sounds like, too, right?
They all sound like that. All the Franks. Monsters. Franks.
So Zachary grew up in Philadelphia's Germantown neighborhood, and he earned a bachelor's degree in English literature from the University of Pennsylvania. During World War II, he enlisted in the Army and served in North Africa and Europe. After the war, he returned to Philadelphia and joined a local repertory theater.
Horror.
What's that?
The true horror. War.
War.
I thought you were going to say University of Pennsylvania.
College life.
World War II is probably a little scarier.
It's kind of interesting that, you know, when we were talking about the Vampirella episode two, that guy went off to war and he came home. James Warren went off to war and then he came home and he was like, I want to relax with some horror. I just want to get into some horror and make that my whole life. And, you know, as we've brought up many times before, I wonder if it isn't like the way that you make sense of the trauma of something like that. As
yeah, like if he would have gotten to therapy if he would have talked about it instead of recreating it.
He definitely is. He's creating this horror character and he's doing this bit. But you know, I don't know. Like Larry Fine before him. I wonder if there isn't something deeper to it.
Hey, it says you want. He's at the pen for like English literature, and then he comes out doing like campy horror things. It probably felt defeating.
Yeah.
We're like awesome, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's like Jesus. I got to do this to pay rent.
Yeah.
In 1954, he gained his first television role at WCAU-TV in Philadelphia, where he was hired as an actor, playing several roles, including that of an undertaker for Action in the Afternoon, a Western produced by the station, and I guess it aired in the Delaware Valley. 3 years later, he was hired as the host of WCAU's Shock Theater, which debuted on October 7th, 1957. So again, these Universal Pictures were released to the television stations.
I really want to see the local Western.
What was the local Western that was produced?
What's the local Western that was
Action in the Afternoon. We got to look that up.
Yeah.
Bunch of cowboys with Delaware County accents.
Local cowboys.
Yeah, there's a new sheriff in town. Yo, did you see that horse in Roxborough?
Back then, they were filled with them. They were wild.
They were wild horses. The wild horses of Roxborough.
As the host, Roland, pronounced Roland, wore a big black undertaker's coat. He lived in a crypt with his off-camera wife, that he addressed as my dear, and she like lived in a coffin, and his lab assistant, Igor.
So I watched clips from all three of the shows we're going to talk about today, and they all had an Igor. Like, Zachary's always talking crap on Igor. Igor was Dr. Frankenstein's assistant, right?
Yeah.
He's always talking, he's like, that idiot Igor messed something up. Dr. Shock also is always talking crap about Igor. And then on Stella from Antioch, she has, it's not Igor, but Iggy is the name of the monster.
I think Dr. Shock's sidekick was Boris.
Always a Russian.
Very Slavic names, yeah, for these lab assistants. They make good lab assistants. They're all very well educated. Hard workers.
All these lab assistants, they're all from Northeast Philly. All these lab assistants.
The hosting of the black and white show involved interrupting the film to do numerous stylized horror comedy gags parodying the film. So this is actually like the invention of that. So I'm pretty sure Zachary Rowland invented many of these gags, because it looks like Vampira was, not that she was doing it straight, but she was doing it very more of like a, you know, full of puns, doing the voice and introducing and saying we'll be right back kind of stuff. But Roland introduced more of these gags, more of these sight gags.
I mean, I think you had to kind of be funny, because a lot of these scary movies aren't actually scary.
Right. Yes.
You know, so it's like, it's a joke.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, it's part of it, you know.
Yeah, they're trying to, yeah, they're poking fun at the genre, and I mean, these super old movies, these are all some of them are pre-war movies, and most of them are 10 years or older.
I would have loved to watch this back in the day, though, when there was no horror movies to see on TV. It's like, oh, this goofy-ass thing, and they're showing these old movies.
In a similar way, I guess I saw a lot of these kinds of movies growing up on Mystery Science Theater 3000, in the same way that they were like making fun of it and being like,
yes,
you know,
yeah, it was their local version in Minnesota or whatever. It was there. That's how it started. It was just, we got these old movies, so let's make a thing around them to show them.
Yeah, because no one's going to tune in just for these 2 hours unless they're into this being campy and funny and laughing at it to begin with. Nobody's tuning in to be scared. So the producers erred on the side of goriness, showing fake severed heads with Hershey's chocolate syrup blood in the backgrounds. And during the movies, the soundtrack would continue to play on the air, while the visual feed would switch briefly to a shot of Zachary as Roland in the middle of a related humorous stunt, like operating on a giant slimy blob or riding on a wild tombstone. And the show ran like this for 92 broadcasts through 1958.
So the clip I saw was like, it was a Dracula movie, and I guess Dracula goes to like an orchestra, and they had like, they cut in clips of Zachary like being the conductor, and people were throwing flowers at him at the end, and like, but it's not from the movie. And also, like, there was a part where Zachary is like, he's like, this old house is so dusty, and he starts cleaning, and then it fades into a commercial for, it was just to set up a cleaning commercial. And then, and then the one part,
I mean, they were just winging it, you know?
Yeah, it was just like, we have to sell soap, so
92 of these in 2 years, it's a lot of work.
And he talked about new horror movies that were coming out. I guess they like advertised them on there, because he would be like, whatever is opening this Sunday, and he talks about the movie, you know?
Yeah, like, coming soon, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. Like, it's
cutting edge stuff back then, right?
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I didn't realize that they advertised movies that were coming out, but that makes total sense. Zachary was a close colleague of Philadelphia broadcaster Dick Clark, and sometimes filled in for Clark on road touring shows of American Bandstand in the 1960s.
As Zachary. That would have been awesome.
Clark reportedly gave Zachary his nickname, the Cool Ghoul, or the Ghoul of Cool. In 1958, partly with the assistance and backing of Clark, Zachary cut Dinner with Drac for Cameo Records. At first, Clark thought the recording in which Zachary recites humorously grisly lyrics to rock and roll accompaniment was too gory to play on Bandstand, and made Zachary return to the studio to cut a second, tamer version. Eventually, both versions were released simultaneously as backsides on the same 45, and the record broke the top 10 nationally.
Wow.
People love their Halloween-themed music. It's,
I used to wait, like,
it's very specific.
Drac the Knife, remember that one?
Yeah, it can only go on one playlist. You can only really use it once a year. But there's never enough Halloween music. There's just never enough good Halloween music.
Not enough spooky tunes.
You can just never get enough of them. Eventually, like, regular stuff starts bleeding in, and it's like, ugh, I'm losing the spook factor.
Me and my wife had an argument about this last night, because I was making a spooky playlist.
You're throwing plates.
Yeah, I was like, Sweet Dreams are Made of These, and she was like, that's not spooky. I was like, it is, right?
What is she talking about? It's got a spooky voice.
I was like, it scared Marilyn Manson.
It's a spooky song.
It's spooky. She says it's not spooky.
What about Putting on the Ritz? Does that count?
If it's the version from Young Frankenstein, then it can go on.
Oh, okay. Good.
I'll share this playlist with you after the show is over, Zito.
Is this a specific Halloween playlist or just a fall time playlist? What is the field of focus?
Well, I think you can play spooky music any time of year, so.
Okay. All right. I look forward to listening to it.
Yeah, it's spooky.
In a 1960s promotional stunt for his move to WOR-TV in the New York market, Zachary, by then a baby boomer idol, staged a presidential campaign. His platform recording can be found on the album Spook Along with Zachary, which originally included Zachary for President book and poster set, which is highly collectible today. So I guess when he was in Philadelphia, he was Roland, and when he moved to New York, they changed it to Zachary and added a Y. So,
I see.
Yeah. So it was Zachary with an E, and then they changed it to Zachary with a Y. But he played pretty much the same character.
I think with Mr. Softy King over in New York.
What was that called? Master Softy.
Master
Softy. Yeah.
Completely different.
Check out our Mr. Softy episode. Uh, So Zachary ran for president in 1960 against JFK and Nixon. He had his own.
How'd he
little,
do?
He
was on the.
He came in third.
He actually was in the famous speech where Nixon was sweating and that's why he lost. But
right.
Zachary, he had a shrunken head. He brought a shrunken head on stage. So that's why he lost.
Yeah.
He had the vampire teeth. But everyone said they looked really fake.
Oh my God, if someone could edit that, I would love it. If you could just edit Zachary into the Kennedy Nixon debates 1960, the camera just pans over slightly and Nixon looks bad, but Zachary looks worse.
He looks really well. He's undead.
He's undead.
Yeah, he looks good for being undead, though. He looked better than Nixon. Nixon was alive.
What did you say last week? Like, he looks good for a serial killer. It's good for a zombie, I guess.
So in 1965, Zachary hosted a teenage dance show for 3 years at WNJU-TV in Newark called Disco Teen, hosting the show in full costume and using the teenage show participants in his skits.
Oh, wow.
So that idea of him hosting Bandstand as Zachary, as
not
Roland.
Not far off.
Yeah, they must have joked about it on set, and they were like, ha, 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 yes, a joke. A joke. And then years later, they
launched. There it is.
Yeah, and it ran for 3 years. It was successful. It was popular. And that was broadcast in the New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia area as well. Zachary's new show left a hole in the programming that was eventually filled by Joseph Zawislak and his Dr. Shock persona with actor John Zachary. Dr. Shock. That's where they get the term shock jocks from, is Dr. Shock.
Is it true?
No, that's not true. No. With the actor lead.
This is Philadelphia, where none of the information is accurate.
With actor John Zachary's permission, Joseph based his character on the original Roland persona, but was more vampiric in appearance.
Vampiric.
I found a song. Maybe we can play a clip of it because I'm sure no one owns the rights to this song. But it's a Dr. Shock song that he put out like a single.
Oh, he also put out some music? Did Cameo Parkway distribute that one as well?
I'm not sure, but we'll play some of it right now.
In days of old, the blood ran cold. If the werewolf's name were said, they shuddered at the vampire with his coffin for a bed. But who's the one that healed these demons, risen from the dead? It's the mad Dr. Shock.
Are you going to play any of it for us, Bierman?
No. I can't.
Oh, man, that was a good one. That was a good one.
What a smash.
What a graveyard smash.
Is the Monster Mash a Halloween song? Because it's about the Monster Mash. It's not actually...
No, it's a Christmas song.
Well, it's not actually the Monster Mash. They talk about doing the Monster Mash. So is it a Halloween
song? They're monsters, though.
Monsters exist 365 days a year. It's not necessarily at Halloween, though.
That's deep.
The Monster Mash is a dance. It's not a song.
What is the name of the song?
But it's the name of the song.
You can do the Monster. You can just, like, you could twist to any song. You could do the Monster Mash.
Yeah, but it's still called the twist, though.
You could do the twist to the song that isn't exclusively the twist.
To the Monster Mash? No.
You could do the Monster Mash to other songs. You could absolutely do the Monster Mash.
Could you do the Monster Mash to the twist?
No. You'll get burned.
So you're playing with fire, dude. Don't stop with this.
We're getting dangerous on the Halloween episodes.
That's how the Batuzzi was born.
It's dangerous to combine dances. That's true.
Yeah, don't do that.
The character of Dr. Shock first aired on WPHL-TV on March 7th, 1970, with the broadcast of 1963's Diary of a Madman. His first show lasted 13 weeks, but a protest march and 10,000 letters from angry fans put him back on the air. 10,000
letters?
That's what it says. That's what it, it's on his Wikipedia page. It's cited.
People protested.
We were talking about like the other guy making like bits up and everything. Like they're not getting instant reactions. They're not like, let's check Twitter out and see what people think. It's like a couple weeks later, some letters show up to the studio.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, people like that one or didn't like that one.
10,000 letters over 13 weeks, I believe it. And then the weeks lead afterwards where they're like, bring it back.
I guess there's only so much things on TV, too. So
I mean, like we've said, it's 3, 6, 10. It's ABC, CBS, NBC.
Was this Channel 17? Yeah.
This is PHL 17. There's Philly 57. There might have been something on. There's PBS. Yeah, there's so little.
Yeah, but did they have all these back then, though?
In 1970, they might have just had that many because Fox isn't around yet. So this one was on for 13 weeks and the producers, the studio was like, PHL 17 was like, we got to pull this. It's nobody's watching this. We're sure. But then they got all these letters and they stayed on the air. They brought them back. However, the studio required major format changes, to Dr. Shock. Three different shows were hosted during his career span titled Screamin', Mad Theater and Horror Theater. They just kept retooling it, trying to make it, more four quadrant. They wanted to try and get as many people as they could. This guy could be alienating, I guess.
It was like the same thing, just like with a different name.
Yeah.
Like they're gonna like fool anyone. Like, wait, Screaming, this is Mad Theater, you know?
It's not that it's like a guy dressed up like a vampire playing shitty horror movies. It's the name of it.
And it's not like he's like a werewolf in this one. Like it's...
Yeah, like, he's still Dr.
Same,
Shock.
He's Dr. Shock.
Right. He's playing the same dude.
Ah, this guy, yeah. All right, what do you got?
The character he played was costumed as a lively zombie with slicked down hair, a black frock coat, and white spats, assisted in his laboratory by a one-eyed hunchback named Boris. His usual entrance was from inside a coffin. That's so funny. In a revised format, he brought in his 9-month-old daughter Doreen and named her Bubbles for the show's sponsor, Bubbles Booth Soda. This softened Dr. Shock's Count Dracula image, and the toddler grew up on air along with the fans.
Oh,
that's nice.
They were like, nobody likes you. What about your kid? She seems pretty normal.
They had to make him more likable. What?
Can you name your son, infant after a soda? Because they're giving us $100 this week, so if you could.
It's like the people. The people got the tattoos of the brands for like free that for life.
Yeah.
Free Mexican food or whatever.
Yeah.
I actually would.
Great deal.
When we were kids, I wrote to 7-Up and I told them I would.
7-Up?
I said, I'll let you. Because they were doing that cans on your cans. It's your cans, like for your butt thing. And I told them I would let Orlando Jones tattoo the 7-Up logo on my can for free 7-Up for life. I was a big soda addict back then.
What?
Yeah. They wrote me back and they said no, thank you. They like straight shot it
They're
down.
Like no, you're a child. We're not gonna tattoo your butt.
I might have been just shy of 18. I was
wrote a lot of letters. Wrote a lot of letters. You were one of those people who wrote 10,000 letters. 17.
Like, bring back Dr. Shock.
Bring back
They're
Dr.
Like,
Shock.
I guess I did. I did write a lot of letters. I was a letter writing person. Yeah, I joined a lot of letter writing campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And then wrote to some places, you know, on my own. I didn't need to be needed to be prompted. I'm still demanding they bring back Golden Girls. I write a letter every week.
Bring back the Golden Girls.
Bring it back.
Do a prequel.
Yeah, thank you for being a friend. What is them young?
The Silver Panthers.
No, it's them middle age. It's not even, it's like not really like real young. It's just a little bit.
It's not that much.
It's a little bit.
Is it, yeah, yeah. This gives you options. You can go back further later on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hollywood, if you're listening.
Bierman, write this down. Are you getting this?
No, I forgot. Someone will tell us.
Dr. Shock, in real life, Joseph, was a resident of Roxborough, a neighborhood in Philadelphia, a devoted amateur magician.
Just like
Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy. And home of the most beautiful white horses.
If there's a string of white horse related crimes, you are making yourself suspect number one.
Appreciation. Appreciation.
If there's like a white horse serial killer.
No, if there's. If
he leaves a little white action, a little white horse at every murder scene.
That's his calling card, a white horse.
I would say it probably sounds like a metaphor for heroin or something, but it isn't.
No, it's not. It's just a horse.
The horse is just a horse.
Wanna ride? We'll ride the white horse.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope there's never a white horse killer.
Let's hope people don't kill any white horses.
No.
In frame trove. I know it'd be so easy to do.
Or a serial killer. I guess I imagined it was a serial killer who's trying to become a white horse.
I was just passing through Roxborough, and I just appreciate white horses. Nothing to do with serial killers. Nothing to do with killing anything. It's appreciating white horses of Roxborough. I think it was Saul, the farming school is out there. I think it was probably their horse. You know what I'm talking about? There's like a farming school.
No.
You know what I'm talking about? Oh, I thought you were from Philadelphia. I thought you knew about the farm school in Roxborough.
Yeah, we all know about the White Horse Farm School.
You don't know about Saul?
You don't know about Saul, dude? Come on. All the Saul listeners are like turning this off. All the Saul alumni.
Do you see?
Do you see? Yeah, I have a white horse tattooed on my back.
Free white horses for life.
Me riding it, Return of Innocence playing.
You riding it backwards. I.
Yep. I'm like taking the fruit of my mouth, it's putting the apple back together.
You're cleaning it, but you're making it dirty.
I'm making the worst dirty. Yep. Everything's backwards.
I can't.
What a waste of time this show is. Just what a waste of time.
What a waste of time. Cut all that. I gotta find these pictures I got of this horse.
Don't have the pictures. Yeah, there's like a room in your house where it's just covered.
I have a hard drive. I have a hard drive of old pictures. I took all my
just like shoot. Taped to the wall.
No, you know you're trying to make it creepy. It's not creepy. Yeah, take your glasses off. Rub your eyes.
This is true. Oh my god. I need a drink of water.
Right. Dr. Shock. We're talking about Dr. Shock here. I'm not talking about white horses.
Dr. Shock was a devoted amateur magician, a deli worker, an insurance salesman.
A deli worker.
He worked in a deli?
He worked in a deli.
I like how that's like our immediate interest.
Oh, wait, he worked in a deli?
We're talking salamis? We're talking salami here? We're talking hoagies?
He was an insurance salesman, a pinball arcade manager, a gas cylinder truck driver, and after he did all that, he hosted the horror show. So he did this for 10 years when he suddenly died of a heart attack in 1979 at the young age of 42.
Oh, wow.
This was truly a passion project. He loved it. He loved doing it. He made it, you know, he made sure he had everything else taken care of so that he had this time free to do this labor of love.
I can't fix pinball. I got to do this.
I mean, you know, he clocked out and then he went right to doing his horror host thing. And, you know, he had a loyal audience. He kept them interested for 10 years through three shifts in time slot and show name. And, you know.
I mean, if you had the opportunity to be a horror host, you'd do it.
I would do
you'd
it.
You'd do it. You'd do it.
It seems like these shows would be fun to work on also.
I'd imagine so.
It just seems like it's just like whatever we're doing this week is what we're doing.
Yeah.
We should turn this podcast into a...
into a horror host.
Once again, Philadelphia was without a resident horror host with the passing of Dr. Shock. And so enter Stella the Maneater from Maniunk. She was the host of Saturday Night Dead, which was a television program that hosted B-horror films on KYW-TV, Channel 3 at the time, the NBC affiliate in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The program aired at 1 a.m. directly following Saturday Night Live from September 29th, 1984, to late October 1990. The show was a cult favorite hosted by Karen Scioli.
What a legend.
Yeah, Karen is legendary. Truly a legend.
Truly a legend. And what a great programming, Saturday Night Live, Saturday Night Dead. Like, for people to go out and just watch TV, that's perfect.
Get high and watch this. The clip I saw. I'll watch a couple clips from the show. But
what a great theme song, right?
Yeah, it's the Mooch by
the Mooch. Yeah,
Cap
Count
Calloway.
Basie, or I think it's Count. Is it Cap Calloway?
I think so. But the Dead is from the Grateful Dead logo. Like on the logo, it's just taken from their logo. Like the Dead, the way they have written the Dead written.
Mashup logo.
I love that too. That's
like
one
it.
Of my favorites. Yeah,
I like it.
I love Stella. I didn't really catch it when it was on TV, so I looked it up later, and then YouTube has been a great resource. And then, Trove and I have gotten to meet Karen on multiple occasions.
You have a totally different experience of meeting her than I
yes.
do.
Yes. Yeah. I interviewed her, or I was part of a team of people that interviewed her, and got to hear about how a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about today. And she was awesome. And she did not come in character, but she had tons of 8x10s. And she signed them off to everybody. And she had a different horror pun for each 8x10 that she signed off. No two people's in the studio were the same.
Nice.
That's yeah. pretty funny. I years ago, I responded to a Craigslist ad looking for a PA. And and, you know, you kind of just show up and you know what you're going to expect. And it was the Saturday Night Dead crew. Like,
oh, wow.
In 2006, 2007. I guess it was probably 2006.
Were you doing a reunion?
No, they were shooting a commercial for, it was like, it was like a bug spray. And we shot it like, at a school. And, like, they had worked really well with kids because they're all, like, pretty, like, funny people. I heard like a woman talking, and she said that she was saying like she would never go down to go in the ocean because fish fuck in the ocean. And I was like a PA, and I like shushed her, and she was like, "Well, I'm the producer." I was like, "Well, you shouldn't be saying that." And and we got to talking, and Zito and I were writing zombie comics at the time, and I knew what Saturday Night Dead was, and Karen's like a great lady.
Did you know she was Stella?
No, I didn't.
She had to tell I'm the horror host from your childhood.
There was like other people there, like the whole crew was like the same crew, and I think I was talking to this guy, the guy Bob, that he was part of the show, like, and it was the same director, and it was I was like filled in. I was like that's Stella from Saturday Night Dead. Like, holy shit. Like, you know, it's like, like, it's like one of those, like, it's a big deal to a local, but, you know, like, and we were like, and Zito and I were still like in horror. So, I was like, I read comic books and, you know, so they immediately liked me. And they're from South, and she's like from South Philly, so you know, you're always united.
Yeah, if you run into anybody from Philadelphia anywhere else in the world, you guys are you're on
except Philadelphia.
Except when you're in Philadelphia, then it's every man for himself.
Yeah, but I ended up like PA.
Then you got
them.
No friends.
I PA for them like a few times, and it was like pretty cool. Back Tony T's Hollywood Stories.
It's like T with an exclamation point.
Yeah.
T.
The program, Saturday Night Dead, was hosted by Stella, dubbed the Maneater from Manayunk, a section near the Schuylkill River, a working-class neighborhood, and the daughter of Desire. Stella's haunted condo was a playground for celebrities and comics, including John Zachary, a.k.a. Roland, who would stop by, Jane Pixan Norman, Bill Willie, Wee Willie Weber, Rip Taylor, Sally Starr, Bobby Rydell, Robert Hazard, Channel 3's anchors, reporters, weather people, and many local comics and Philadelphia icons would stop by.
Rip Taylor, whoa.
Yeah, that's a that was Sweeps Week. I saw one, it was, she's like Stella. So Stella is different from a different horror host because she's not haunted or anything. She's not a zombie, she's just a person.
No, she's not a vampire, she's a vamp.
Mm.
Yeah.
But
I also find that interesting. It's a very 1980s, 1990s play on it as well, like an evolution of it. And I think it's really cool. She's not just an Elvira or a Vampira copy. She's definitely
It's definitely their own. It's definitely their own.
They really put thought into it. There's a lot of love going on in this in this world they created.
The one I watched. The she is like, John DeBella is sending six people to Transylvania for Halloween without my permission. And then so she gets mad and she calls John DeBella and they cut to John DeBella picking up the phone. He's like at a, I guess they're at the MMR studios or whatever. But and then she threatens him with giving him a haunted mustache. But then I watched other clips and yeah, she's like, the one was like, cause her bed is haunted, the bed moves and shit. And she's like, looks like the Eagles football team has been playing tackle. She said Eagles football team. But yeah, a lot of local jokes.
I love the opening sequence where like, it's like covering all like the hunks. Like it's so funny.
Stella delighted in half-clad, gorgeous young men and often had one or two hanging in her dungeon awaiting her pleasure. According to her biography, Stella was, quote, born in North Libido, New Jersey, a small village outside of Atlantic City. She's the only child of traveling hecklers. Her parents dropped her in a plastic basket at Fifth and Shunk in front of Guido's hair weaving and plumbing supplies. But for all intents and purposes, she was raised by a flock of pigeons, end quote.
Wow. That's an excellent backstory.
It's a great origin, yeah. Yeah. She claimed to have been reincarnated 37 times. Stella was just your typical ghoul next door. Stella was portrayed by Karen Scioli, a South Philadelphia-born actress and writer who weekly donned a push-up bra, slinky black dress, feather boa, false eyelashes, and a mole on her right cheek. As clarified by Scioli in the 2006 documentary film American Scary, Stella was not a vampirist or a monster. She was instead a traditional non-supernatural vamp. In 2012, Scioli Stella was inducted into the Horror Host Hall of Fame.
Legendary.
Wow.
Yeah, I on the other Wikipedia pages for Zachary and Dr. Shock, it doesn't say anything about the Horror Host Hall of Fame. I would assume they're in it as well, but there just isn't any mention of it. If somebody knows better, please tell us.
Invite us. I want to go.
Yeah, where is the Horror Host Hall of Fame?
It's some banquet, I heard.
It's a banquet. It's like a guild.
So many Philadelphia and New York City-based actors worked on Saturday Night Dead. Stella's butler, Skeeves, was initially portrayed by Bill Brown. When Brown departed the show, he was replaced by Bob Bilborough, who then played Hives. Glenn Davish played Cousin Mel. Mad scientist Dr. Schuylkill. faceless dungeon master Iggy, who ate that Stella didn't like. The talking portrait that gave sarcastic responses about whatever Stella was wisecracking. Nerdy Mel was told by everyone in tribute to the character on the Dick Van Dyke Show, played by Richard Deacon, to shut up, Mel. Davish had appeared in Mannequin with Andrew McCarthy, Kim Cattrall, and Estelle Getty.
Oh, crossover. Oh.
So check out our Mannequin. I don't know. He was just in it. Richard Deacon.
That guy, Bob, he worked in those commercials, too, and I used to argue with him about Batman.
What would you argue about? Does he have controversial opinions on Batman, or do you?
He was mad that at the time they were saying that Batman's father was really alive, I think. And he said it was, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Batman's dad's come back from the dead a couple of times.
He said it was a slap in the face to the Batman community. And we argued about it. I was
because you liked Batman's dad coming back, or you just liked
I didn't think it was that offensive. I didn't think it was that offensive to. It doesn't mean Batman's life is a lie.
No, I think it does mean Batman's life is a lie. He made a vow because his parents died.
It is a slap in the face. No, I'm with him.
It's a slap in the face to Batman. It's hard.
I don't think it ended up really being his real father. Whatever. I'm not trying to open up any wounds, all right?
Too late.
Other prominent regulars on the Saturday Night Dead show included Alan Fitzpatrick, who appeared as Stella's love interest, Rhett Cutlett, a butcher from Manayunk who had been raised in the Old South. Cutlett, a character devised by Fitzpatrick, was modeled on Clark Gable in Gone with the Wind. Fitzpatrick also portrayed Rhett's mother, Vela Cutlett, and scores of other characters, including a bimbo on the Lonesome Diva storyline, a parody of then TV show Lonesome Dove. I guess they had a show within a show, like Twin Peaks. Other highly featured regulars included Donna Ryan as whacked out psychic Madame Tofudi and Kathy Robinson in a variety of roles. Stella's canopied bed, Bela Lugosi, also appeared. The bed was notable for both its speaking and vibrating.
Yeah, the bed.
It's a good one.
There's gags with the bed.
This show is really funny. I encourage everyone to look it up on YouTube.
I know their bits. Yeah, their bits are better than the movies that they showed.
Yeah, that's why people are tuning in. I'm sure it's if you're up that late at night after Saturday Night Live, this is definitely your kind of humor. And I think they really found their audience. Saturday Night Dead featured classic movies as Night Fright, directed by James Sullivan, Shivers, a.k.a. They Came From Within, directed by David Cronenberg, Tomb of Ligeia, directed by Roger Corman, Dracula vs. Frankenstein, directed by Al Adams, Ooh. And Gamera, Super Monster, directed by Marikiya Yuasa.
That was probably a big deal. When you get the heavy hitters, you know.
Yeah, so I don't know which Gamera that would be. Bierman, off the top of your head, is that one of the '60s ones or '70s?
I don't know. I'm not versed in Gamera. I only Godzilla.
Only Godzilla. Yeah, that's where it ends for you.
I'm actually anti Gamera. I don't want to get into it, but I have controversial opinions.
Is this why Gamera has a restraining order against you?
I have a restraining order against Gamera.
Well, it seems like, looking at the paperwork, it seems you counterfiled, and he submitted first.
You can't sue me. I'll sue you.
Yeah, it's double indemnity.
Double indemnity.
Gamera's a bum. That's all I'm saying. He's a turtle. Turtles aren't scary.
I saw Gamera on Mystery Science Theater 3000 to tie all that together as well.
No, I do want to watch those movies at some point. We keep talking about me and Zito keeps talking about the 90s, the ones that they made in the 90s.
Yeah, the Gamera 90s movies.
No one cares.
Which apparently stand on their own or whatever. But I saw the originals on Mystery Science Theater 3000, and I remember as a kid being like, huh, that's stupid, that turtle flies. But like...
Now I get it.
Now I get it, man. Now it's like I get it on a deeper level. Now I understand. why that turtle flies. Yeah, not how, why. Do you guys have anything you want to add? Do you have anything about horror hosts that you want to mention before we go? I guess...
I like the concept of them. I hope they keep coming. Elvira's still around.
Yeah, Elvira's still around. Trove and I have a local favorite, Skeletor of Skeletor Karaoke, who also will host live screenings and events of horror movies.
Skeletor.
Yeah, and I think Stella also still appears as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Stella, your baby, is named directly after her, right?
Absolutely.
Directly, 100%.
Okay, that's pretty much all there is to know about Philadelphia-based horror hosts. Please check out our website, www.southfellini.com, for cool Philly-inspired merch. Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We want to hear from you. Was there a local horror host where you grew up? Is there a Philadelphia horror host we're forgetting on a different network?
Yeah, write us in.
Leave us a comment. Let us know. Follow along and join in the conversation. We want to hear from you. Look out for new episodes of the podcast every Monday. Stay safe, wash your hands, get a vaccine, and wear a mask.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.